Hi, it's Tony Brisky from Real Ghost Stories Online. Every single day, Jenny and myself do our best to try and create the best possible show for you. But it's not free to do that. We have a lot of hard costs on this end to distribute the show, produce the show, and put it out there for you. So we ask for your help by becoming an EPP, an extra podcast person. We're doing our best to make it worth your while by giving you a bonus episode every single week with some of the best stories we can find. Also, exclusive video content, including our new monthly video feature, Seeing Ghosts, where we examine some of the best ghost photos and discuss them that we get into the show here at Real Ghost Stories Online. All I ask is that if you listen to the show on a regular basis, please consider helping support keeping it on the air. It's only $5 a month, or sign up for a full year at a time and get 1 month free. If you already are an EPP, thank you very much. If you're not yet, please consider supporting a show that you enjoy so we can continue creating it for you. Sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. And thank you.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a family friend finds a way to make his presence known, but only after assuming it was simply an electrical issue for months. A cemetery groundskeeper finds only the dead can have a restful break. A shadow person becomes so regular that he's given a name. And would you tell your friends that their home is haunted if they were easily terrified? Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brisky joining you once again.
I think you would tell.
Of course I would.
I know you would.
I'm that kind of person.
Yeah.
That's why I have very few friends.
I know.
But I'm very honest with them, and they appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
When they don't always take my advice, but they can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is the issue with a lot of friendships, you know, these days. People don't want to... You know, it's not about upsetting the other person. It's being honest with the other person.
Sure.
And I think, you know, that's what some true friendships are made of. That's where you can be brutally honest with the other person and give the opinion of how you see something or what's going on. And then the other person can accept that and not take it as a personal attack upon them. Because a real friend's not trying to attack the other person. They're trying to help the other person.
Right.
And I'm just blunt. So
you are.
So, I mean, that works for me. I'd rather have very few friends, but have it be really meaningful, rather than like a shitload of friends and I have to bullshit them all the time so they don't have their feelings hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat. I like being a hermit and just doing the show. It's nice.
The dog hates me because I'm always brutally honest to the dog. I'm like... God damn it, you shit in the office again. And then he gets really upset and looks really sad.
And he hides.
Then he hides. Then I go and hug him and give him treats. And I have to make him feel better about himself. It's an essence, and I don't yell at the dog, but it just reminds me of that that SNL bit, dissing your dog. Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so.
It's like it's a training technique, quote unquote, and Will Ferrell is sitting there. And he just disses the dog, and the dog just sits there and doesn't do anything whatsoever. I mean, the thing is, I mean, we have, like, the nicest dog. But he can tell when I'm upset at him. And I don't scream at him or yell at him or anything like that. I'm just kidding about that. But he can tell. He knows when he's done something bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, all I have to do, really, is just look at him. And he knows it. The other day, he was in the office here with me. And I had gone in to the house to get something. And I came back out. And he had got up off of his bed, knocked the trash can over, and had trash kind of strewn around. And it had only been like 5 minutes. So it's like quite a lot of work. And there's a lid on the trash can and everything. Anyway, he did all that. And I just walked in here. And he just, I just looked at him. And he just put his head down in shame.
He's smart.
He knows. I mean, he knows when he's done something wrong. And I just looked at him, and that's all I needed to do. And then it was done. And then he just, you know, we were back to being friends. But it's just funny.
It is funny.
You just give him the look. So anyhow, 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, you can also write it to the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Betsy writes in, About 10 years ago, during the summer, my mom's best friend's brother became very sick and spent most of the summer in the hospital. By August, he passed away. After he passed away, my mom and I started experiencing a series of strange events at our house. At the time, both my older brothers were away at college, so it was just my mom and I living in the house. The first event that took place happened when my mom and I came home from running errands, and the living room ceiling fan light was on. We looked at each other and felt very confused because we knew we didn't leave any lights on before we went out. We let it go from there and figured there was some kind of logical explanation. A few weeks go by, and then another incident took place with that same ceiling fan. I was in my early teens at the time, so sleepovers were kind of a regular thing I did on the weekends. This particular weekend, my best friend was staying the night at my house. My bedroom sits right at the end of the hallway that faces a living room with the fan. My friend and I were in my room with the door closed, and we were starting to drift off to sleep. Then I noticed a blinking light under my door. I kept seeing a light go on and off. I asked my friend if she was seeing the same thing I was, and she was seeing it too. I got up to see if my mom was doing something in the living room, but she was in her room fast asleep, and the house was completely dark and quiet. I went back in my room, closed the door, and went to sleep. The next morning, I mentioned to my friend how weird that flashing light was, and she had no idea what I was talking about. At that point, I just thought I was crazy, till I told my mom about seeing the ceiling fan light flash on and off. My mom then told me that she's been seeing that ceiling light flash on and off, too. Over the next few months, we just got used to seeing the light turn on because it was happening almost every day. Throughout, that was something linked to the paranormal that never really crossed our minds until Thanksgiving. We spent this particular Thanksgiving with our family friend whose brother had just died. During the pre-dinner visiting part of the evening, my mom mentioned something about how our ceiling fan had been malfunctioning and turns on and off all the time. Then my mom's friend said that it was weird because in the last few months, our lights had been flickering on and off on a fairly regular basis, too. Also, their fire alarm keeps going off, even if nobody is cooking anything. We thought it was very strange that both of our houses started having issues with lighting at the same time, but didn't really talk about it any further. We sat down for dinner and did a toast to the late brother of my mom's friend, and at that exact moment, the fire alarm started going off and the dining room light flickered on and off. Fast forward a few weeks, my mom and her friend went to one of those psychic reading things, and the psychic did a reading for my mom's friend. The psychic told her that her brother wants her to know that he is still here watching over her and the people close to her. She then asked the psychic how she's supposed to know when he's around, and the psychic said that his favorite thing to do is play with the lights. In a matter of moments, all the weird events that my mom and I experienced suddenly made perfect sense. Since that reading with the psychic, neither of us had any more issues with our lights.
I would have been so frustrated to be playing with the lights to try and be like, hey, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody pays any attention. I mean, they notice it, but they don't think anything of it.
Especially at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
When the revelation is made and then, bam, the lights go off, the fire alarm goes off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can you pass the cranberries?
Right.
Yeah, that would be very, very frustrating.
I think being the home improvement fanatic that I am, I would have already replaced the ceiling fan and had it checked out, had that continued, you know, and just tried to fix the problem. I don't know that I would have thought about it being paranormal.
Well, I think immediately it's probably not paranormal in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just that it just kept happening and you start thinking, well, maybe there's something seriously wrong with the electrical in general.
Mm-hmm.
With the house, not just the fan or whatnot. But then you start connecting and without the correlation between the two families and the things happening, you could have easily written that whole thing off as, well, it's just shitty electric.
Right.
And there's something wrong there that should be looked into. But then all of those things put together, that's where it points into the paranormal direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that it then stopped once it was kind of recognized. I think I would still do it if I was the ghost.
You wouldn't be like, okay, points made, I'm done.
I'd be like, okay, and for my next trick, I'm going to turn the Jell-O mold into real cranberries. Yeah, the Jell-O cranberry mold into
jellied cranberry
mold.
Okay.
Into real cranberries. That's what I would do at Thanksgiving the following year.
Okay.
Didn't we get the can of cranberries? Why is it now all this beautiful cranberry relish? What happened? Now that would be a trick for a ghost.
I don't know that anybody would notice.
I would. I'd be upset because I like having my slice of cranberry.
But if you're a ghost doing it, nobody else is going to notice.
Did we take out our slices of cranberry this last Thanksgiving? I'm trying to remember.
No.
Did we buy them?
No.
Damn it. I'll have to get some, just, you know.
I think there's a can rat holed up in the pantry.
Is there one up there?
I think so.
I love the sliced cranberry.
It's going to be dinner, isn't it?
I used to have that, like, year round. That was like dessert mm-hmm. or a side. Mm-hmm. It was a very common side dish, not just at Thanksgiving. It was like, okay, who wants a slice? And that's how I thought cranberries came. It wasn't until I was an adult that I realized that cranberries are not the shape of aluminum cans. It was quite a revelation. And tuna fish also comes in things other than hot dish. That was another revelation I made around the age of 20 or so. So all these things, the more you know. That's what they should have put on the NBC thing. You know, had like, hi, I'm Matt LeBlanc from Friends. You know, tuna actually can be served in other ways other than casserole dishes. That's how. That would have been much more meaningful than half the things I talked.
You are exceedingly random today.
Lacey writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. Thanks for reading the stories I sent in regarding my own personal paranormal experiences. I have several more of my own, and I'll share eventually, but wanted to write in to pass along one I was told by my mother. While I was growing up, my mom worked with the daughter, I'll call her Stacy, of the caretaker of one of the largest cemeteries in town. My mom had also gone through school with her older siblings, so they knew the family well. They were raised in a house that sat right in the center of the cemetery. Awesome sauce, being that I have always been interested in the paranormal. When I learned this, naturally, I was curious to know if they had any ghost encounters growing up there. Mom asked Stacy about this for me, and while she didn't have any concrete stories herself, she did have one that her father, the caretaker, had told her. I'll call him Jim. Jim was a self-proclaimed skeptic. I guess you might need to be to feel comfortable living and working in a cemetery. But he did have one experience he couldn't explain. One day, while doing some groundskeeping, he decided to take a break in a corner of the cemetery and sat down against a tree. Soon he was fast asleep. He'd been out for a while when he felt himself being woken up by someone tugging hard on his shirt, as if trying to pull him up. He awoke with a start, expecting to see someone standing over him, but no one was there. Upon standing up, he realized he had fallen asleep on top of a grave. Jim said he had never experienced or saw anything else out of the ordinary the entire time he lived and worked in the cemetery. Though he was a no-nonsense kind of guy, he always stood by what he experienced that day. Thanks for reading, Lacey.
I was always brought up that you do everything you can to not step on a grave.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why.
Or sleep on a grave?
Well, I wouldn't sleep on a grave. I mean, I guess maybe if I were a caretaker and I was mm-hmm. taking a break.
It's just out of respect. That's all it is.
Really? Okay.
I mean, that's a common thing. I remember, visiting a cemetery, you know, with my cousins especially. It was three rambunctious little boys. And many a times it was, don't step on the graves! And it wasn't me shouting that. I didn't really care because I was five. But it was, you know, my aunts and uncles and my parents like, Ben, get off the gravestone. You know,
right.
It would be, you know, you don't step there. And I just think it's a respect thing. You know, you don't do that. But little kids do all the time.
I guess something didn't want Jim sitting on the grave.
I guess so.
That's weird.
What I always wonder sometimes is when you get into older cemeteries, and you take a look at the way things are laid out. Newer ones, it's fairly systematic. You know, you can see where, because very, very clear plot lines, if you will. Okay, stone here, space here for the casket. Stone here, space here for the casket. In some of the older cemeteries, not so much space here for some of the caskets mm-hmm. before the next stone comes up in front of that existing stone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, some of it may just be because it's maybe just a marker. Maybe they were, you know, lost somewhere. Maybe something happened and they weren't actually buried. Maybe they were cremated. Maybe a lot of things could have happened,
mm-hmm.
you know. But You have to wonder sometimes, though, of, do we just do some bad measurements? Is somebody on top of somebody here? You know, how exactly did, how did that work in some of those cases? Because I've seen some that are pretty damn tight. Ones I really don't like, and this goes back to the respect of you don't step on top of the dead people, mm-hmm. Is there's a lot of cemeteries, especially some of the older ones, and I think it might be in my favorite cemetery a bit. There's some where the grave is like literally like right on the roadway or like right next to where the road goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if that person is buried there, they're being driven over quite a bit. Like the marker is right there on the curb. So,
and you're assuming that it's not maybe the marker and then the plot is actually behind.
Well, I guess in theory that could be a possibility, but I don't know. And a lot of those are on really big, steep hills. So that also makes me wonder a lot of things, too. It's like, how did they get into that hill like that? Or maybe it was easier because you just kind of dig into the hill and make a little fort.
I think you spend too much time worrying about that.
I don't worry. I just think. I just wonder.
Mm.
It's not like I'm like, I'm really worried. I'm just like, how did that logistics? The logistics of the cemetery. On the next Maury. 855-853-4802 is our number. Anna writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. I've called in a couple times, but the last two calls have not made it on air since I'm sure that I rambled on in my calls. The only call I had played was my Aunt Paula visiting me when I was really depressed on my father's birthday. I never was able to meet my aunt since she passed in 91 and I was born in 95. So a week after my dad's birthday, I had lunch with my uncle Vince. He was engaged to my Aunt Paula before she passed and still remains close to our family. I told him about my experience with her coming to see me. He stared at me wide-eyed and asked when it was so that I told him it was on August 6, my dad's birthday, around 11:45 p.m. He took a deep breath and said, I haven't told anyone this because I didn't think anyone would believe me and they would think my mind was playing tricks on me since my father just died. But I saw her that exact same night. With his permission and me talking to him last night on the phone and having him fill in some blank spaces in my memory, here is what he said happened to him the same night she visited me. I woke up around 12 in the morning and saw someone walk by my bedroom door out of the corner of my eye. So I looked next to me and saw Sarah, my wife, was asleep. I got up and grabbed the baseball bat from the side of my bed and went out to check it out. I checked everywhere around the house and didn't see anything. So I chalked it up to me being distraught over my dad and my mind playing tricks on me. After I checked all the windows and doors, I went to the kitchen and poured myself a glass of Maker's Mark to help me fall back asleep. As I went to take a sip, I heard her voice say, "Don't," in the sweetest tone. I put the glass down on the counter and just stared at it. At this point in his story, he started tearing up in Panera while telling me this. As I was staring at the glass, I felt a hand on my shoulder. But it felt like a cold spider web, not skin. At the same exact moment, all I could smell was a scent of mint chocolate chip ice cream, which she ate every night before she brushed her teeth and went to bed. I knew it was her. I just knew it. He paused and took a deep breath, then continued. I wanted to turn around, but I was frozen, scared, shocked, and shaking. Then almost as if she knew I wanted to turn around, not audibly but mentally, she said, "Don't look. Go to bed. Lay with your wife. I know that one day we will see each other again. Don't worry about your dad. There's no pain where we are now. I love you, Vin Vin." And with that, the spider webs and mint chocolate chip smell was gone. He said I felt completely calm, poured the whiskey back in the bottle, and grabbed a bat and put it away as well. I washed my face, sat straight up in bed, having the last 5 minutes rerunning through my mind. Once again, I saw something out of the corner of my eye by the door, so I looked, and she was standing right there, and she was glowing. I said aloud, "I love you." Sarah rolled over and mumbled, "I love you too, dear." Of course, I looked at my wife to see if she was awake, but she wasn't, and looked back at the door. She was gone again. By the end of our lunch, we were two very emotional people sitting in Panera, silently crying. We think that me going to her grave and talking to her about my problems and bringing him up there during my visit with his struggling with his dad passing, made her decide to come down from heaven to visit us. I know I believe in the supernatural. I have a resident ghost in our rental home currently and had many experiences as a child, but those are for another time. I love you guys. Hope to hear this on the air. Take care. Anna from Cleveland.
I think that's neat that she can come back and comfort even though he's already moved on.
Yeah, I think it was almost like exactly like she described it there. Brought it up at the grave, mm-hmm. having the conversation, and for whatever reason, if that works and it somehow summons someone back to do some comforting, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What sort of bagel did you have? That's my
question. You're stuck on the Panera part.
I'm stuck on the Panera, because it was going through my mind is a while back, Panera had this ad campaign where it was these, you know, encounters, these emotional moments, if you will, that people are having at a Panera. It was like a father and a daughter right before they go off to college, and they're talking about life and, you know, mm-hmm. all these things. And I'm just picturing that as a version of one of those ads. And just how bizarre that would sound in a Panera commercial.
Yeah.
And I would laugh and I would get it. But it's one of those things. And it's something, you know, you see people having moments, you know, like that mm-hmm. out there in public. And you never really know, you know, what's going on. I think a lot of times we go to, you know, very, you know, basic explanations of someone must have died. Someone, you know, this or that, you know. It's very straightforward, I think, with assumptions that we make. You know, very rarely do you go, oh, I bet the person's ghost relative came back and they had an encounter last night. It was very emotional. And that's why they're crying over the macaroni.
Okay.
You know, it's you know, you don't usually go that far. But, you know, it's interesting just to hear the other side of one of those experiences that I think a lot of us have seen or have had ourselves, mm-hmm. you know. So, good story. Thanks for sharing that with us. Brooke writes in, well, let me start off by giving you some background. These stories happened at my dad's house, and he lives in Indian Trail, North Carolina, a suburb of Charlotte. This happened when I was in high school, so I was 15 to 18. One thing that always confuses me was my dad lives in a new home that he built. I always thought it was a haunted house and it had to be old. I now know that's not true. Well, it starts with my sister. She's about 3 years younger than me. She'd come sleep with me, and she would get scared and say the door opened or she heard something or saw something, which was fine with me. I didn't mind her sleeping in my room. And we started to notice a leather chair my parents have in the living room would always have, I guess you would call it, a butt print. It looked like someone was sitting in it. Very clearly, a butt print in the leather. This chair, no one ever sat in it. You could not see the TV from the chair. Really, now that I'm thinking about it, I've never even seen anyone sit in it. But back to the point, it always had butt prints as if someone was sitting in it. Also, our dogs would growl at things we couldn't see, and they would look at the chair a lot or at the stairs. That really used to freak me out. But this one day, I was sitting at the breakfast bar with my stepmom talking. We had a lamp on the bar with beads hanging from it. Well, they were drinking coffee and talking, and I felt something. And I looked at the lamp, and the beads were moving as if someone was playing with them. The beads moved in a circle, kind of. Me and my stepmom stopped talking, and we both just looked at it till the beads went still. Then we freaked out, looked for a way to explain this. We couldn't find a way, and it wasn't near a window or a vent of any kind. It was just very weird. My stepmom is a stay-at-home mom, and she would be alone in the home all day. She'd tell me about doors closing and stuff being moved. My parents still live in this home. I no longer live there, but my parents and my sister still tell me about things. I really enjoy y'all's show. Thank you so much for reading my story. I'll be writing back soon to tell you a story about a vet's office I worked at that is believed to be haunted.
I want to hear about the vet's office, too.
Be interesting. I would imagine there's a lot of energy there.
Yeah.
A lot.
You know, I think it's funny that nobody ever sat in the chair, but there's a butt print. You know, the ghost probably thought, hey, nobody ever sits here. This will be my chair. And he still gets crap for it.
Is there a reason? I mean, other than the being the TV, you know, not good viewing for that. But I wonder if there's any other reason why no one else ever sat in the chair. If it was just, you know, not necessarily the chair physically being uncomfortable mm-hmm. from a physical standpoint of the chair, but like just, you know, getting an odd feeling in the chair, and then that's what's making people move.
I don't know. I think most living, you know, living rooms or or dens have a spot where, yeah, you can sit there. Maybe only somebody sits there when you have a group over or something. Mm-hmm. But it's usually not everybody's favorite. Everybody kind of has their favorite, and they scout that out, and that's their spot.
Sure. There's usually one of those chairs somewhere.
Right.
It has that. It's interesting that it always had the marking.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sharing that with us. Our next letter comes into us from Cherie. When I was about 15, I had this big old bedroom with a fireplace and super high ceilings. I didn't have much furniture, so just have this empty, creepy vibe. My mom, stepdad, and new baby stepbrother lived there for about 2 years, but only over this short period of time did something actually happen. It started one night when I woke up by the sound of my door opening and then slamming shut. I didn't think much of it, just assuming mom had come in to check on me. The next night again, I awoke to the sound of my door opening, but this time footsteps and creaking floorboards before the door closing shut quite loudly again. This made me sit up to call out to mom, but no reply, making me scared, so I just pulled up the covers and tried to go back to sleep. The next morning, I asked mom if she had come into my room, but she hadn't. The next night again, I was awoken by the sound of my door opening, followed by the footsteps and floorboards creaking. I pulled the cover over my head and held them tight, waiting for the thing to slam the door shut and leave again, but at the same time the footsteps came towards my bed before I clearly felt the pressure of something crawling onto my bed. At this point, I start to kick and cry, all while holding the sheets tight over me, too scared of whatever was on my bed. Soon after, again, I heard the door slam shut and the feeling of whatever was on the top of me gone. I guess I eventually fell asleep, but probably after some while. The next morning, I woke up with small cuts all over my legs, which didn't make me feel any safer from the thing that was coming into my room. I decided to sleep with the lights on this time, hoping that maybe this thing wouldn't come, but again, I was awoken by the door opening, followed by footsteps. I was so scared, but wanted to face whatever this thing of... So I worked up the courage to sit up and see whatever it was, but as soon as I did, I heard the door slam shut and it was gone. I didn't see the door swing shut, though, but it was such a clear sound, and I guessed all that had happened with the previous nights made me feel that I wasn't just making things up. The next day, I told some of my closest friends at school, as I just needed to talk about it, as I was so scared to go home again. A couple of friends said they believed me, and one said that she would bring me a crystal to protect me from whatever it was. That night again, I woke up by the sound of the door opening, sat up right away before I could come any closer to me, but this time it didn't leave. Instead, I heard the footsteps walk across my room, followed by the sound, but didn't see anything there until the footsteps reached my desk, and suddenly everything was wiped off real quick. My chair spun, and I heard the door slam shut again. At this point, I pulled the covers up over my head again and cried myself to sleep. Next morning, I woke up and immediately saw a black and white sort of translucent man sitting in the corner of my room, right by my bed, looking right at me. I instantly freaked, but the man disappeared. Only this time, even though I knew I had seen a ghost, it just didn't seem aggressive or scared. And I had the feeling that he was just as scared or upset or something sitting there in the corner, holding his knees, so I didn't feel threatened by him. I got up to check if what I thought I had seen last night was real, and yes, it was. All that was on my desk was sitting on my bedroom floor. That day, my friend gave me the crystal, which I hung above my bed, and from then on, nothing ever happened again. Till this day, I'm certain that I was hearing things, and I know this was all real. I guess it felt like two different spirits, one angry and aggressive, the other more scared and lonely himself. I don't know. Anyways, other than this, lots of small things have happened, such as things flying from near me to the other side of the room way too fast and far that I know it couldn't have been me accidentally just knocking it off. Other times I can feel something or someone in spaces, feeling that something is there. At my current boyfriend's family's apartment, I know there is something in his hallway. And so when I need to use the bathroom at night, I run, and as I have a... distinct dark feeling of something standing right over me with such a feeling of anger. I know a couple of times I see a dark, tall figure standing in the darkness at the end of the hallway. I've told them about this, but they don't believe me at all. Oh well, probably for the best. Anyway, sorry for this all over the place writing. I'm real fast while I'm off to work. I just know if I don't write in now, I might never do so. Thanks for the podcast, guys.
I don't know much about crystals and the use of them for protection, mm-hmm. but it seemed like when she got the crystal and she brought it home and put it over her bed, that it kind of pissed off whatever's bothering her. Mm-hmm. Where he couldn't, I guess, get within a certain distance.
Sure.
So he knocked the stuff off her desk and was really frustrated, it seems like.
I'm wondering if there was two things involved here. One thing that was trying to scare her and bother her, and then if the white man that she saw in the morning was there to protect her and kind of on the other side warded off whatever this dark thing was.
Mm-hmm.
And then having that crystal there, beyond that, then also with, you know, positivity and whatever else kept to keep it away. I don't really know a whole lot about that world either, but I would venture to say that maybe something along those lines were at play. There was two things going on there.
Yeah.
In that room at the same time. Good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. Our next letter. Hey, you guys, really love listening to your show. I always try to listen to an episode every night as I'm falling asleep. I have so many real ghost stories stored up over the years. Basically encounters that people have been telling me about. I'll try to write them all in at one time. The first one I'd like to start with is something that happened to me as a child. When I was about 3 or 4, I was wandering through my grandmother's house one night, and as I walked up to the drawing room, it was completely dark in there. I had a distinct feeling that there was a woman in there, in a white shawl, draped around her, and she was praying. I told my mother about it, and she came with me to check. Of course, when she turned on the lights, no one was there. I should mention here that I never actually saw this woman. It was just the feeling that a woman is in there, and that we shouldn't disrupt her. I got this feeling many times, and would often stand just outside that room. It had no door, and I would just look in, never daring to actually go inside. After that, for several years, I'd have dreams with the same theme. I'm in some house, it would be a different house most of the time at night, and through the windows, there's a woman staring at me. I can't see her face, all I can see is a silhouette, but I know it's a woman. Waking up from that would always freak me out, and I would always check the windows every night as I would fall asleep. That's it for now. I'll write in more stories when I get a chance. Keep up the awesome work.
You know, we've talked about people just being, I don't know how to say it. I want to say projected upon,
mm-hmm.
you know, where spirits are just sending them messages of what they look like, and they're seeing it just in their mind,
mm-hmm.
which it may be there, but they're not actually seeing it with their eyes.
Sure.
What is that called?
I don't know, but I know exactly what you mean.
Okay.
Where it's something where, because we were talking about that the other day. I don't know that there is a word for that. There probably is. But where, for example, two people are standing there, one person seeing something, the other person is not. Is that entity actually out there? Is what is being seen actually out there? And that one person just sensitive enough to pick up on seeing that thing out there by the doorway? Or is it just something that's being fed into their mind,
mm-hmm.
By whatever that thing is? And that thing is just out there in the ether, if you will. You know, it's kind of along the lines of the other way to look at it is when people say, we had one earlier where he heard a voice say something to him, but he knew it wasn't audible. It was just, it was like telepathy or
uh-huh.
telepathically communicated
uh-huh.
to him as an audible voice. But, you know, if you had a recorder, it wasn't going to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Same sort of deal, except for visuals.
Okay.
So maybe that is that telepathy when it's a visual? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I think we're talking more about like the logistics of it,
mm-hmm.
than how do you know like what is what at that point?
Mm-hmm.
It's another chapter of shit we'll never know about.
Yeah.
So, our next letter. Hi, Tony and Jenny. I have a story for you. When I was a preteen, I would stay weekends with my dad at his new girlfriend's house. His girlfriend, we'll call her Cindy, lived with her mom, her two kids, and one of her nieces. This was cool to me because I had three brothers and on my mom's side, and I finally had two girls my age to play with. Cindy's niece would call her Denise, and I became quite close and shared a lot of interests, including ghosts and witchcraft. We were young and didn't know much about or how bad witchcraft was, but we didn't care. We went to the library and checked out a book that had some spells and some how-tos on witchcraft and decided to try some spells. The first one we tried was an unlock door spell, a simple and not too scary one. My dad and Cindy were at work, and her two kids were in their rooms with their doors shut, and Cindy's mother was in the living room napping. Anytime my dad left the house and Cindy wasn't home, he would lock his door. He always did this and never once forgot to, so I was sure it was locked, but just for confirmation, we tried the handle, and like I suspected, it was locked. So we stood in the front of the door, chanted the spell, and not only did the door unlock, it flew open. We screamed as it scared us and ran into Danielle's grandmother's and told her what had happened, and she told us my dad must have forgotten to lock it and shoot us away. When my dad returned, I told him what happened, and he reassured me that he definitely locked his door and believed us 100%. My father was always a believer as well. He told me he would talk to the ghost of his father at night, and Cindy reassured us that she would wake up to him talking to someone and ask who it was, and he would respond, "My dad, you don't see him?" His father died when he was only a small child. Something else weird that happened in that house a few weekends later. I and Denise were sitting in her bedroom just talking, and I was wearing a pair of shorts, and my legs were exposed. We were talking about typical preteen problems and boys, and I randomly looked down at my thighs, and there's a huge bright red handprint on it, as if someone had just slapped me as hard as they could. But I felt nothing, and it was in a position that I couldn't have made it. I showed my dad and everyone, and they believed me since Denise was sitting next to me and witnessed that there was no way I could have made it. I'm not sure if this had anything to do with the fact that we were messing around with the witchcraft, but we never messed with it again. Thank you, love the show. I listen at work to keep me entertained. I'm an EPP and hope to hear my story. I have a ton more, and we'll write in again soon.
If she has a ton more, then I'm suspicious that things didn't go away.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where a lot of times people open that door out of curiosity as kids.
No pun intended.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. and then it just kind of escalates from there. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes not even escalates, just kind of a consistent weird shit happening.
Yeah, but if you don't realize that it's bad as a kid, I can understand the curiosity there.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, that's how it's an innocent thing as mm-hmm. a kid. You know, it becomes not that when you are more well aware going, I know what the horrible intended consequences can be here, mm-hmm. but I'm going to try it anyway. Yeah. You know, when you're like, 10 and you're like, oh, there's a lot of things you don't realize could be bad when you're 10.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I understand that. It's just a matter of then trying to figure out, okay, how do you get this to go away? So please write in and share more of your stories. Violet writes into us, "Dear Tony and Jenny, this is my first time writing in. Thank you so much for your show. Love the dynamic you guys have, and it really puts a bright spot in my work week. Jenny, no pressure, but I really hope to hear another piece of your writing someday." No pressure, Jenny.
No pressure. Okay.
"Your holiday story last year was absolutely wonderful. Anyway, the reason I'm contacting you is to ask you guys and your listeners for some advice. Three of my friends share a house together. It's an older house that's situated in a neighborhood that used to be pretty rough, but is now being rapidly rehabilitated. The house is in desperate need of some updates, which is why it's cheaper than apartment living. I've been friends with these fellows for several years now, and I've noticed that this is the fourth housemate that they never mentioned. Jokingly, I've come to refer to him as Bud, after Bud Abbott. Bud is a shadow person. I've never seen Bud when I've been alone in their house or when it's just me with one or two of the housemates. At first, I thought he might be following or attached to just one of them. I just get the sense that it's a male, appears more often and becomes more active when there are higher volumes of people in the house. Maybe he's stimulated by the energy. If there's a band playing in the living room, he'll peek his head around the corner of one of the downstairs bedrooms or stand in the foyer. If we're all in the kitchen, he'll peek around the living room doorway. If we're in the backyard, he'll watch from the kitchen. I've mostly only seen him in my peripheral vision at various times of day. The few times that I've caught him in my direct sight, it happened for a fraction of a second, and he just appeared as a large shadow that quickly disappeared around a corner or up the stairs. I've been there when the house has been smudged. It may sound odd, But in Portland, Oregon, you can get a service for just about anything. Yet, even after that, Bud still remained. I don't often see paranormal entities and haven't seen shadow people anywhere but this house. I haven't tried talking to him and would rather not. I do, however, get the sense that he's shy and curious and, like the property, desperately lonely. The house doesn't feel eerie or negative. The housemates are longtime friends, more like brothers, and don't have serious conflicts or emotional disturbances. None of them have brought up having nightmares or seeing anything paranormal or unusual. Although a couple of times when I turned to look at where I knew Bud was standing, I turned back to see the same one of the housemates looking at me. Here's my question. Do I tell my friends that their house is haunted? These are the type of people that are too terrified to watch Ghostbusters, if that puts anything into perspective. Since he seems to be benign, I don't know if it's worth scaring them. What would you do? Thanks for reading my story. Love the show. Happy holidays and have a great year. Violet.
I wouldn't.
Violet, here's your long distance dedication. If you want to continue living there, probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where it may not have the intended consequences come about that you have in mind of simply informing someone of a factual thing that's going on in the home. It may end up being looked upon as negative. It's one of those things where if you do say it, and then you suddenly start to notice fewer and fewer invites coming along to things, you may end up having to attribute it back to sharing that little factoid.
Well, and if they don't even want to watch like a movie like Ghostbusters, then they have no interest in the paranormal at all. So it's not something that they're going to find really neat.
Sure.
Being that it's kind of a benign spirit. But if they're easily, terrified, or they don't have any interest in that, then all it's going to do is make them uncomfortable in their living space.
Well, and you have to think of it this way, too. I mean, it may be something that, although, Violet doesn't necessarily readily see a lot of these things in other places, there may be a sensitivity there that she is the only one that's seeing this there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's her sensitivity that's picking up on it, and they're not at all. So, as long as there's not other things going on in that house where these people are being disturbed by it and they want some confirmation from the outside that what the hell's going on here, I don't know that it really would make a whole lot of sense to share that.
Mm-mm.
But now that you've shared it with all of us, maybe someone in that world will connect those dots and go, hey, you know your friend Violet that comes over to this house sometimes and in this specific neighborhood that's being revived? You got to listen to this. So maybe we'll end up doing the sharing for you. There you go. 855-853-4802. Jesse writes in or calls in.
Hi there. This is Jesse out of Iowa. First of all, guys, I want to say thanks so much for sharing my shadow person story back around Halloween time. I was just about perfect for that season. And just meant a lot, It was just nice to have some confirmation knowing I'm not nuts, and making sure my imagination wasn't getting the best of me. I wanted to share a couple stories about being kind of visited from my dad, actually, in dreams. My mom and I both have had a couple dreams that were really interesting, and they're mostly uplifting. I'm not sure you guys will consider this a ghost story, but they were really powerful for both of us, and I'm hoping... I was just listening to some of your recent podcasts, and a couple people have lost loved ones, and it's kind of emotional for them to speak, and I just thought maybe these kind of stories be more uplifting for those who've lost, especially after the holidays. It's tough. So I'll start with mine because it's pretty short. My dream was about, it came around the right time for me. It happened last April of 15, and I don't know if it's early April or late March, but it was powerful for me because, again, give you the scenario, earlier that winter, it was really tough. My dad just died. I had some stuff going on and just really, really hard. My mom was kind of losing it. Obviously, she's lost her husband. She's been married for like 36 years, I believe. And, that was her best friend gone, And so it's hard to kind of help her then again, it's kind of, she's on her own too for, you know, trying to figure this out on her own. I can only do so much. And during this time, I actually had an accident. I had a tree whack me in the face. I do timber management during the winter time. I lost two front teeth, and I was down for a couple of weeks. I had this big old hole in my lip, and just couldn't do a whole lot. You know, it was really hard. But it was actually the best thing that happened to me, because as soon as I was ready to go back to work, I was just like a work maniac. I mean, I was super depressed. And I'm just like, yeah, it's, you know, let's go balls to the wall, you know. And it was still pretty tough, my business, but it was going really good, you know, just emotionally. And so anyway, it was again late March or early April after this happened. I'm doing really good work, and things were going, looking up, and I had this dream. And it started off with me, I was driving, I have this dream truck of mine. It's a Toyota Tacoma with the Cummins engine. It's a new truck coming out. I'm super excited about this new model. But anyway, I'm driving this truck, and it has all this gear for my work in the back, stuff I needed, stuff I've been dreaming about having, right? And I even have a wedding ring on, and I'm married now, actually, which I think is kind of neat. So maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy dream. I don't know. Or it's just really comforting. And I can tell my persona, my dream, I could feel that things are going great. You know, I'm making good money. My business is doing great. You know, it's just going really good. And in real life, in my dream, I'm on the road I live. I'm driving down into the road. And in real life, this road comes to the highway, and on my right-hand side is a white schoolhouse, which I pass by every day when I go to different jobs. And so I get, I'm in my dream, it's like almost dusk, and it's a very bright dusk. Like, you know, the sun is setting, but it's really, it's hard to describe. It's like almost like eerie, but very bright. It's kind of, I can't really describe it. If I could paint, I would send you guys a picture, but I can't. So anyway, I get to this white schoolhouse, and I'm about to take a right onto the highway, and then my phone starts going off, and it's my dad. And I answer the phone, go, hey, Dad, how's it going? Just like any other day I would answer the phone to my dad. And guys, I heard his voice, like he was speaking in my ear, but it was very staticky. And he said, son, I'm proud of you. Keep going strong. You're doing a great job. Just keep on the path you're on. You're going to do great things. Okay, Dad, love you. See you later. And that was it. And I woke up, and I wasn't sad. I was happy, you know. And it was such an awesome, awesome experience. Still, my dad made the effort to contact me. It was just so cool. Now, my mom's dream, I'm trying to keep this really short because I know I'm running out of time, but her dream takes a little bit longer. And I asked her, she doesn't care. She doesn't care. So, man, I'm just sure her dream. Her dream, this happened like June or July, I think. But anyway, she had a dream of, we're originally from Michigan. And her, my dad, and I was a baby for some reason, her dream at the time. We're walking to this old church that we used to attend when I was a kid, a really little kid. And her and my dad sit down, they start talking, and my mom says, you know, I'm so, and in real life, my mom bought this new car. And she goes to my dad, she goes, I'm so sorry, Paul, I bought this new car that I had permission, blah, blah, blah. And my dad, in real life, my dad was kind of a cheapskate. You know, which is okay, but he was just, you know, kind of hoarder in a way, but he had a hard time buying new things, and which is very, that, and I don't care if you buy new or used, doesn't matter to me, but it also runs. But he, in her dream, he was super excited, like, oh, great, let's go check out this new car, you know, that'd be great. And my mom's like, oh, he's never like that. And they're walking around, and then, you know, I don't remember all the details, but pretty much in that show, my mom starts kind of breaking down. My dad's like, you know, what's wrong? It's like, well, I miss you so much. You've been here and you're gone. You know, I don't understand how you're here. And he goes, well, it's kind of hard to come down here. And he just said, my mom, listen, Lori, you got to get on with your life. You got to move on. And you just can't hold on to the past anymore. You got to move on. And he started kind of fading away. And his body, it looked brand new, like a brand spanking new body for my dad. And it started kind of deteriorating like the form he was when he had Lou Gehrig's before he died. And oh, this part's right. She goes, well, no, what's going on? Where are you going? I was like, well, it's kind of like, and I got this line wrong. I used this line too soon. He said, this is the right line. It's like, well, it takes a lot of energy to get down here. I'm just here for a little bit. I was going to say, I love you and just let go. And in a bright light, he was gone. So, and that was really emotional, obviously, for my mom. And my dad is, you know, she was just showing her that he had a brand new attitude, great new life on the other side, you know, which I believe is heaven. You know, I mean, that's where he's at. And it's just awesome for, you know, I'm not sure how those rules work in the afterlife. It was just awesome. My dad made the the ability, or God let him do it, I don't know how it happened, to visit me and my mom. So I hope my mom's story made sense. It's been a while to listen to it, and she doesn't want to talk about it, honestly, because it makes her, you know, really emotional. So that was kind of a nutshell of her story. But I hope someone listening to this podcast found this uplifting or inspiring, or just to know that their loved ones are okay. So anyway, Tony and Jenny, you guys are doing a great job. I hope you guys had an awesome Christmas, and I hope you have a great New Year's. And take care. I have another story of a friend of mine I'm going to share later. You guys have a good one. Bye.
Sometimes it's nice to hear a positive story.
It is. It is. And you know, I don't know if Jesse's thought of this, but it almost is like when he, you know, when Dad visited him after, you know, he'd obviously passed away and he was going through kind of a dark time, you know, maybe Dad was showing you things to come, and that this will get better, this too shall pass, and, you know, that you're going to eventually get those tools that you want, and maybe that truck that you want, and, you know, be married, and you'll be happy. Mm-hmm. And in the same moment, go ahead and tell you, though, how proud he is.
Sure.
And then with the mom, I almost think that maybe it was, you know, somehow they were able to go back to maybe a very happy time, you know, when Jesse was a baby and everything, and that's where they chose to meet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It sounds like there's more to it than just a dream.
Yeah, it was a very, you know, it's an interesting thing when you have a dream like that and you can identify suddenly a different emotional state that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because until you have it, or if you've had it, you know what that is like. Or suddenly, if you're feeling one way in real life, and then suddenly, what the hell? There is just, you know, knowing that certain people exist, and just having that sense of it. You know, in real life, you have that, and then to suddenly be in a different state in a dream, and knowing that this exists, or that doesn't exist, or this doesn't exist. You know, it's like almost a telepathic thing, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's like, bam, it's just there. It's that sense of these things belonging. And then suddenly to have that in that dream with the dad visiting and all of that. I think you're right. I think it was, you know, a path of showing things will get better.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the end here right now. Give it some time and this will be your life in the future. And he was, you know, communicating that. So
yeah,
that was a very cool story. Thank you for calling in and sharing that with us here on the show. We greatly appreciate that. If you like our show and want to keep us on the air, please consider becoming an EPP, Extra Podcast Person. Sign up to do that on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. Get access to all of our bonus episodes, all of our bonus video content, and more. realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.